Hello, I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Jim Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we're going to talk about things that we think will make us happy, but actually don't. We will take a look at the growing number of adults who are estranged from their adult parents and what is behind that. We're going to introduce a new segment called Blessed or Stressed. All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Engaging Culture Podcast, joined, as always, by the one and only Reverend Pastor Judah Sanders. Judah, how
Bishop,
are you?
Bishop, Apostle, Chief Prolet. I want all my titles.
All of those titles.
That's so funny.
How you doing?
Living the dream. Living
all
the
right.
Dream. Feeling better now that I've had my organic yerba mate.
Yes.
I think that's how you're supposed to say it.
You know, I don't know, but
to be better than coffee.
I see it's empty, so you've drank it and hopefully feeling better.
Yeah.
But we are recording here on a Saturday, so hopefully this episode will probably come out a couple days early, but we're here on a delightful Saturday afternoon,
yeah.
And I want to know, Pastor Judah, what was the best thing you saw this week?
Best thing I saw this week was my mother, like 800 feet in the sky. She just turned 50-something. She's in her mid-50s, and for her birthday, we went parasailing.
Yes.
And it was just funny to see that old lady in the sky living her best life.
Did she ask to go parasailing?
It's a bucket list thing. She didn't ask, but it's a bucket list thing that she's wanted to do.
So this was not involuntary parasailing that was projected upon
her. That's right. I didn't force her to go parasailing.
Okay.
What I did forget to tell her, I didn't tell her what we were doing. I just told her that I needed the day. And I forgot to tell her to wear a swimsuit. So she was in wet jeans for like 5.5 hours.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
But she liked it.
She did. She had a really good time. We barely made it because traffic was so bad in Tahoe. So I'm glad that.
But it was parasailing over Tahoe.
Uh huh.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Water.
Oh yeah,
beautiful.
That's awesome.
Water. Best thing you saw this
love
week.
Love it. Best thing I saw this week. So shout out to our very own Pastor Mark Henkel for bringing this to my attention and then to the attention of the rest of the staff. The show, The Promised Land. Mm. Which the pilot is on YouTube. Apparently, their goal is to record like 4 or 5 more episodes this fall for release next year. If you have not yet watched it, dear listeners.
It was good, huh?
It was so good.
Really?
Go and watch it. So it is meant to be the story of the Exodus in sort of mockumentary format. Mm. So think The Office or Abbott Elementary or whatever. And Pastor Judah, I'm guessing you share my skepticism for Christian media. And okay, is this going to be good? Is this going to be cheesy?
Comedy, yeah.
It was funny.
I've
watched it twice, and it was very funny. And just some of the nuances they give to the characters. Now, listen, is it tracking the biblical story? Yes. Should you replace your quiet time with watching this show? You should not. It adds some things. It takes some licenses with some of the characters. But some of the nuances of these characters are so funny. And yes, I loved it. It was certainly the best thing I watched this week, if not the best thing I saw.
I do want to say, as somebody who just like YouTubed it, searched in YouTube, the first thing that comes up is not it.
Is not it.
This does not look like this.
Not Promised Land.
Yeah,
it is the Promised Land.
The Promised
it
Land.
It is about the Exodus. All of the cast members are of Middle Eastern descent, which I loved that.
Historical accuracy.
So yeah, go watch it. It's like 33 minutes long. And it's terrific.
Love that.
So there you go. Shout out to Pastor Mark for bringing that to my attention. Appreciate that very much. All right. Pastor Judah, we are talking about happiness today.
Yeah.
And I think you and I agree that happiness is a good thing.
Yeah.
That we're not anti-happiness. And yet, we were both intrigued by an article that we saw in Time Magazine that talked about a few things that we think are making us happy, but in fact are doing the opposite.
Let the people tell it. They'll say it's not actually making us happy.
So, first of all, I guess my first question for you is this. Why do we as humans so often get it wrong when it comes to what is going to make me, quote unquote, happy?
Well, I think first, and this is what I've been really intrigued by as I've been thinking about this week, I'm not actually sure that happiness is, in fact, I'm sure that happiness is not supposed to be what we're chasing. So I think that that's the first part as believers, right?
Sure.
That we're not promised happiness, that happiness is not our purpose as believers, right? Relationship with God is our purpose. And then I think the other reason that we get it wrong is because our definitions, I think, get muddied. I think we confuse happiness for euphoria. I think we confuse happiness for lack of pain or lack of being uncomfortable. I see this a lot with young adults and kind of the Gen Z, Gen Alpha group, this like just intolerance for discomfort. And so I think we just don't have the right definition. And so therefore, we're looking for the wrong things to fill this kind of muddied, inaccurate definition of happiness. I think that I'm kind of in the wheelhouse of why I think we get it wrong.
Yeah.
What comes to your mind when you think about why we get it wrong and how do we get it wrong?
Well, I think that we short-term and long-term happiness are often achieved by very different ends, right? Like, so for example, the very first thing it talks about is we tend to associate happiness with suppressing negative emotions, right? So if I am ignoring or bottling up anger, fear, resentment, all of that, if I'm squishing those and I'm just like, no, too blessed to be stressed, I'm happy all the time, that is somehow going to have long-term benefit.
Yeah.
And that is an example of something where truly in a moment, if you can sort of get some, you know, I was going to say release, that's probably not the best choice of words, but if you can sort of shift your mindset away from your negative emotions for a moment, sure, like that might make you happy, but long-term, is that going to bring about sort of the life that you want? Short term, it is way easier for me to scroll Instagram and maybe figure out what some mix of friends and strangers are up to. There is no vulnerability to that. I can sort of be happy, get a little dopamine hit. Whereas the work of building a relationship, of say sending a text message to get together with somebody or checking in, like there's vulnerability, there's time, there's emotional energy. Those are all things that can be maybe difficult in a moment, but we all know that the quality of relationships has a huge impact on your overall joy and happiness. So like long term, you get what I'm saying?
I do.
The long term and short term, there's a huge difference there.
I think you also just hit on something about this kind of, in the article, one of the articles, we read several articles about kind of happiness. And one of them mentioned something you just hit on, which is that we consume this diet of, you know, marketing and other influences that really kind of shape our ideas about happiness. I see this a lot in young people's, you know, ideas about relationships, right? That they're kind of shaped by things like Bridgerton on Netflix. And a lot of times those marketing influences, their goal is not to actually help you be happy. Their goal is to sell product.
Right.
And
so or to entertain you.
That's right.
Which is fine.
That's right.
But like,
and still that's a means to an end, to sell the product.
Totally.
If the product is the show or the movie or whatever.
So something that I thought was interesting is this Time Magazine article said that research has concluded that suppressing negative emotions is, quote, a barrier to good health. And it goes on to say, a study suggests bottling up emotions like frustration or disgust can make people more aggressive. Another indicates that the habit can lead to lower social support and fewer close relationships. Mm. Additional research has linked suppressing emotions to an increased risk of early death from any cause. What's interesting is a book that I was reading several weeks ago was talking about how the researcher who wrote the book was sort of drawing this line between suppressing emotions and a lot of sort of chronic, pretty gnarly health conditions. But I do think that this one in particular speaks to a desire I think we all have, where sort of short-term happiness is just a moment away, kind of at any time. We have this desire to pretend like things are better than they are because it feels sustainable until it's not. Mm. And I do think that a huge part of emotional maturity and even spiritual maturity is to be able to recognize our negative emotions for what they are and actually learn to process them appropriately.
To relate to them better.
Totally, as opposed to stuffing them, denying them, shaming ourselves for them, or letting them explode, right?
Yeah, I think it's important to not see happiness as the absence of negative emotions, right? Like, what does it look like for me to be happy and acknowledge that sometimes I'm angry, sometimes I'm stressed, sometimes I'm scared? And I think, you know, as Christians, I'm always having to remind myself that, like, those negative emotions are given to me by God. Like sadness is given to me, anger is given to me, frustration is given to me. And so what are they there for?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do with them? And I think that that's kind of the journey of figuring out happiness.
I love that question of looking at that emotion and going, what is it there for?
Yeah.
And then even maybe that idea of sort of digging a little deeper to go, okay, what's really going on here, right? And I just, even as I look at my own life, as I just having gone through therapy and some different things, just trying to be a little more kind of emotionally honest with myself and identify the emotions I'm feeling so that they're not sort of controlling me, but instead I feel like I'm able to kind of navigate them and process them effectively. I just think that is so important. And yet I can very much relate to, I think, again, that desire we all have just to go, okay, how do I make this go away?
That's right. How do but I not feel
it
this?
It doesn't work.
There are some things in this article and in several others that we have been thinking will make us happy that actually don't make us happy, and some other things that will make us happy or that theoretically might help us to find happiness. What were some things that you were surprised to read, if anything, that we think make us happy that actually don't?
I thought it was interesting that it talked about free time, how the benefits of having some free time level off after about 2 hours per day, and they decline after 5 hours of free time per day. That really, if you have more than 5 hours of discretionary time per day, that actually starts to cause more harm. I guess, you know, you asked if it surprised me. I guess that doesn't really surprise me all that much, but I do think it... I guess as somebody who just does not have a ton of free time, the idea of like, oh, I can just choose what I do, like that is...
Sounds like it'd be bliss, doesn't
right.
it?
It is very appealing. And like most people, I probably have more free time than I think I do. I just fill it up with different things. But I think that's kind of the idea, is this sense of going, okay, if you have discretionary time... Number one, what are you doing with it? Because I don't think we were made, like, leisure is fine. I like leisure as much as anyone else, but we're not made for pure leisure. And I think for us to be able to kind of know ourselves well enough to know, okay, what is really restorative to me in my free time versus what's not.
Yeah. I was actually surprised by that too, for the same reasons. I was also surprised the article talked about how people who, and shout out to our rural friends, they're going to be like, we told you, people who live in cities or in densely populated spaces with strangers tend to be less happy than people who don't. And one thing that the article cited is it said that we tend to do best in communities that kind of cap out at about 150 people.
Yep.
And so more than just the kind of, oh, you're happier in a, you know, in a less populated or less dense space than a more open space or a more rural space, what I was surprised about was that number of 150. And it made me think through, how do we shape our communities?
Yeah.
And then how do we make sure that if we're in spaces where we're around a lot of strangers a lot, how do we incorporate breaks from that, right? Yeah. Like how do you learn to be happy if you live in New York City?
Yeah.
And so I think that community building piece is really critical to our happiness. But I'll be honest, Pastor Brian, I just am not sure that happiness is supposed to be what we're chasing.
Well, yes and no. Like I understand sort of it's something of a trope in Christian spaces to sort of delineate between joy and happiness. Certainly if somebody could probably pull some audio from way back when of me sort of waxing eloquent about how we're not supposed to be happy. We're supposed to chase joy. Happiness is an emotion in the moment and we're meant to have joy, which there is some truth to that.
Well, and that's not even my delineation so much as, I mean, you used a word just a moment ago that I liked, and it was restorative.
Yeah.
And I like that idea of chasing restoration, of chasing health, of as opposed to feeling good.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the Bible says godliness with contentment is great gain. And I do believe that there is a measure of contentment that is found when our lives are oriented around the Lord, when we are connected with Him, when we are in community. I mean, this idea of we're best with communities that cap out at 150. I mean, I've said to people for years and years and years, like wherever you are, like you're at a big church, find your people, like find the people who are kind of your crew, right? And when we're doing those types of things, there is a measure of contentment that comes with it. It doesn't mean life is not hard. It doesn't mean that you don't face sadness or trauma or difficulty. But I do think, to your point, if the end goal of my life is my own personal happiness, I don't think life is going to go very well, because that is ultimately a very shallow goal. I think that happiness is a byproduct of a life that is oriented around the right things. That when I am, again, connected with the Lord, when I'm engaged in meaningful work, right? When I'm not just like, I don't think a life of happiness is found watching Netflix 8 hours a day, yeah, right? Like, it's just, and I'm not trying to hate on any of that, but
or
just
even
to go
centering the pursuit of money.
Sure. It's not just about leisure or accumulation. I mean, another thing even that the article talked about was that when we accumulate money for the purpose of more things,
that's right,
we're less happy. Whereas if we use it on experiences, we tend to be more happy. I think that happiness, again, is a byproduct of life the way that God intended.
Yeah, that's
good. And when we are orienting our lives in the manner in which God intended, we walk through tragedy, we walk through sadness, we grieve. But there is, I don't know, there's a pastor of a church in New York who I listen to quite a bit who talks about this idea of kind of avoiding regret. And I think that this sense of going, okay, when my life is oriented in the right way, come what may, I might be sad, I might be happy, but I'm not going to be filled with this regret of like this sense of like I've wasted my life. And I think that and I'd love to hear a little bit more from you about kind of what you mean when you're like, I'm not so sure we're supposed to be chasing happiness. But I do think that that's kind of what it's about. This sense of like, I'm not wasting the years that God has given me just on my own pursuits and my own, like, what makes me feel good in a moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think it sounds like you understand what I'm saying. And what I'm trying to communicate is that I really feel like that the thing we should be chasing now is what you said, which I'll sum up and say health, right? Mm-hmm. Which is orienting your life around the things that God esteems as important, which are relationships, healthy, meaningful relationships, and a life that like seeks to please Him. And I'm hesitant even in saying it like that, because I don't want it to sound like I'm saying, well, you just need to like if you just focus on worshiping God, just ignore how you feel. Like, I'm not saying that yeah, you should like opt in for like misery and not, that there's not space to say, hey, there are some things that I want to enjoy more. But what I am saying is that I think that we need to change. I wonder about changing the goal, right? And if the goal is I want to be with God and with people, right, in healthy ways, then I think that and being really present in that, I think that that should be the goal, and I think that that will be a better experience versus just, I don't know, happiness.
And what that is that is sustainable. Because even another thing, and we'll link to this article in the show notes, I encourage you all to read it, is another thing the article talks about is the idea of just accomplishing your goals, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Does not actually give the level of long-term happiness that
getting
we think
the degree,
it does.
Getting like a promotion.
By all means, like go for it, but understand, like, let me put it this way. And this is a way that I've always kind of thought about my life and just various goals and accomplishments I have, is that wherever I am, like I'm there. I am who I am. And no amount of accomplishment is going to change that. Like, I'll give a quick example. Like, we used to live in a small little house, my little family of four, and it was a neighborhood of houses of varying sizes. And we could walk easily to this park, which was great when my kids were young, just having a place we could walk and go on the swings and slides and whatever. And I would catch myself pushing my kids on the swings and looking at these houses right across the street that were like double the size of mine, that were like way bigger. And I would, yeah, and I think I'm not beating myself up for this, but I would find myself thinking, man, it would sure be cool to live in a house that size. And I feel like God really spoke to my heart to go, you know, Brian, if you live in a house that size, you're still you.
Yeah.
So like,
wherever
what are you,
you go,
like,
you
what
take
are you,
you
bringing
with you.
To that house? You know, you accomplish this promotion, like, great, cool, but you're still you.
Yeah.
And you still have to deal with the issues that you bring to the table.
Yeah.
And what I've found in my life is when I say, okay, I want to deal with what's going on with me internally. I want to have healthy practices in my life, spiritually, relationally, physically, whatever. Then wherever I am and whatever goals I'm seeking, I'm living in a way that is sustainable. I'm living in a way that's in line with my values. So I'm not like dealing with this dissonance all the time. And I'm not looking to something else, the bigger house, the promotion, more money, whatever, to be like, once I have that, right, then I will have arrived.
And that is my struggle. That is,
but that, and that's where just that reality of going, whatever happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think again, being present, right? So like if I can have the goal, but also being present as I'm trying to achieve it, I think, as opposed to kind of holding on with this, you know, tight fist to the accomplishment of it. If I lose the weight, right, if I get the job. But like, what does it mean to say, okay, I want the degree, but I'm also being really, really present as I'm going after it and I'm enjoying my classes and I'm enjoying working out or whatever it is.
Right. Well, and you're clear about what that goal can and cannot do for you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, getting that degree might be great. Like, I've thought about going back to school myself, right? That would help, right? But it's not like all of a sudden I'm this different person. You might lose weight, get in shape, get married, get a raise.
Yeah.
Those are all great. But like, when we expect that some worldly thing is essentially going to be our savior and make everything all better, that's when we get into trouble.
And even in the Christian lens or the Christian space, we do this sometimes with our faith where we say, if I just read my Bible more, if I just pray, and those things are all important. But again, that's why I think it's got to be the relational piece and not the behavioral piece.
Yeah.
As much.
That deeply we're connected with God, connected with others, and that's sort of our center.
And very
point.
Present.
Yep. Good stuff. We'll be right back.
All right, Pastor Brian, we are launching a new segment today we're calling Blessed or Stressed, where each of us is going to present a cultural moment or trend or story or something that is happening in the world, something that has changed in the world. And we're going to talk about whether or not we think this new thing is blessing us or stressing us and why. Pastor Brian, kick us off. What are we considering today?
Oh, I will kick us off, Pastor Judah. It is a headline I saw in the Wall Street Journal. I had to read the story. The headline was this: Do your socks make you look old? Gen Z thinks so.
Yikes.
Subhead, sock height is the latest style skirmish, with one 26-year-old saying, if you're wearing low-cut socks, it means you are 30-plus.
First of all, why are people looking at my legs this much?
Second of all,
that's the issue.
Why is being 30-plus such a problem? I think we can both agree.
I'm in my late 20s, sir.
Oh, yeah, sure you are.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, me too. Okay, so the article goes on to say that across gyms, workplaces, and the internet, a fierce controversy is kicking around about sock height. Higher socks, such as those that cover the ankles and go as tall as mid-calf, were popular in the 80s and 90s, but now they're seen as stylish and the socks to wear by teens and Gen Zers. And Pastor Judah, here's what you must understand about me and the manner in which I was raised.
Okay.
I believe it would be fair to say that fashion sense was not a significant point of emphasis for me growing up. That is rather something I tried to pick up from people around me, as opposed to my own family of origin, who they are wonderful people with many strengths. I would not say that an exquisite sense of style is among them. So I remember my whole childhood wearing crew length socks and the socks with the stripes and everything else, and feeling like such a dork, and finally realizing in high school, around the time that I'm getting jobs and have some disposable income and, you know, whatever, oh, the cool kids,
they wear no-show
socks. That is the way to go.
That was the cool way to go.
It was the cool way to go. And I, as an elderly individual who clearly knows what is cool and what is not, I still think that's a good look. And yet, if you look at Gen Z today, the no-show is clearly out.
Here's the thing. I have all kinds of issues. First of all, if we're going to consider somebody's fashion sense, would socks not be at the very bottom of the list? Like, I just feel like it takes up the least amount of space on your body. Like, when you look at somebody's fashion, do we not shirt, pants, hat, scarves, sweaters, shoes. We have so many things to get to before we scroll all the way down and get to socks. That's first. Second of all, I'm irritated about this. Second of all, there is something to a practicality about low-cut socks versus crew socks. I would think
preach
that if it is warm, perhaps it just makes more sense to wear low-cut socks. And when it is cold, it makes more sense. This is like saying, oh, to wear jackets is unfashionable. Well, not if you live in New York in the winter, Gen Z. I just want to remind everybody, and listen, Lucian, edit this out if it's too controversial, but this is the same generation that ate Tide Pods. Maybe we ought to consider this with a more critical lens.
Now they're trying to tell us we need to suffocate our calves.
You're not going to have my calves sweaty.
In the summertime. So it is pretty, I mean, the things that we sort of argue about generationally as a society are a little bit amusing to me. And certainly this would qualify. I mean, I just love just certain things in the article. The sock divide has generated countless social media skirmishes with somebody saying this, seeing someone wear Air Forces, which for those who don't know, that's a type of shoe, with no-shows hurts my soul a little bit. And this person
is
clothing.
Your soul is too sensitive. Tell your soul to suck it up.
It's just, now, I just, the reality that fashion, you know, it's the circle of life, right?
Sure.
That even, like, even in the last, like, 5 years, like, it's no longer, like, skinny jeans are no longer in, that now it's big and baggy and this and that, which is like, okay, that was how you wore jeans when I was a teenager, and now it's back. Like, that element is funny. But it is interesting to me that it's not just anecdotal. I mean, at Hanes, sales of socks that rise above the ankle up 5.9% since 2021, while sales of low-cut socks down 3.8%. It is such a, like, backwards thing for me to think, oh no, wearing a crew-length sock, like, that's cool now.
Because it so wasn't.
It so wasn't.
It also makes me worried about our future. Because I remember, I'm a little bit younger than you, but I remember, I think maybe the early 2000s, there was this trend, particularly in Black communities, where we wore these humongous baggy t-shirts that looked like dresses on it. I'm not exaggerating. Where there was like the Soulja Boy era.
Sure, yeah.
Google Soulja Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Where the shirts were down to our knees.
Uh-huh.
And if we are saying now that crew socks are what are appropriate... how far are we taking this trip? Are we going to come back to wearing those baggy shirts? I mean, are there any fashion trends that you remember that you were like, I cannot believe we ever once wore that?
You know what's funny is one that I have long since made my peace with and even succumbed to that I still don't understand to this day. This was the first one that made me realize I'm getting old because I don't understand this.
Okay.
Flat-billed hats.
Okay.
I don't get flat bill. Now, I have an extremely large head, so I can only wear, I can't just go to the store and grab a hat. Like, it doesn't work that way. So I actually have to wear, I have one hat that I've had for years that is now like broken down and practically disintegrated that has a nice curved bill and it fits my head great. Mm. Other than that, I have to wear flat billed hats because those are the only ones I can get that fit. Mm. But I don't get that. And I would somewhat say, like, super, super baggy jeans, I thought, I look back on even, like, how I would dress, and I'm like, that ain't it. How
about
you?
That wasn't it. Yeah, definitely the big t-shirts was just horrific. I still wear skinny jeans, but I don't believe in the, like, super, super bright colored ones. Like, we were doing, like, neon green skinny jeans. I do not miss that season.
So, Pastor Judah, I will admit, I will give it a try. I needed new socks anyway, so a bunch of my socks have holes in them. So I will give crew socks a try, not for anything where I'm like gonna sweat.
So you're doing best.
We'll see. No, I'm still. Well, first, let me hear from you. Is the fact that crew socks are back? Does that make you feel blessed or stressed?
Stressed.
Yeah.
I am stressed. Are we bringing back 3-button suits and 4-button suits now? Like, how far are we taking this? This sounds inappropriate.
Slippery slope. No, I'm with you. I am stressed as well. I love my no-show socks. I think they look better. I think they look better on others. I don't know, man. But again, getting old. So there we go. But also, I just think it's a little silly that even between generations, we need to argue about sock length. Wear what makes you happy. That's ultimately
wear what makes me happy. That's fair what enough. You should wear.
Okay, what is yours?
Well, mine is a lot less fun and light. But there is an uptick right now in using weight loss and accessibility to weight loss drugs. The most popular right now being Ozempic, which mm-hmm. is an injection. And I won't take you through all the science of how it works, but essentially it dramatically decreases your appetite in ways that weight loss surgery previously had. But of course, weight loss surgery is not as accessible to everyone. It's not the right solution for everybody, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so it is really trending right now. And what, depending on when you met me, you may or may not know this, yep. but I used to weigh 300 pounds. My highest recorded weight was 320 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I say my highest recorded weight because when you're really, really heavy like that, you don't tend to enjoy getting on the scale mm-hmm. and reading all of that negative news that makes you feel bad about yourself. I'll speak for me. And so I lost a ton of weight over the span of like 4.5 years and got really healthy. I got chiseled. I built a lot of muscles. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of my tenure here at Bridgeway, I was like in my most healthy physical season. Mm-hmm. And then over the last 4 years, I have gained, as of today, 30 pounds and not loving that, right?
Okay.
So I have really been thinking about, you know, whether or not it is a good idea to invest in weight loss prevention drugs. Mm-hmm. And there are, I mean, all kinds of different thoughts about how it affects your body. There's also like the pride element of it in terms of, hey, so if I like lose this weight using Ozempic, are people gonna, you know, tell me that I didn't do my work and all those kinds of things? It's also a new drug.
Yeah.
Or a relatively new drug. And there's some, you know, some unknowns about the long-term effects and all of that. And so Pastor Brian, for those that know you and know that you are a hefty 400-pound man who also struggles with his weight. This is not true. Also, for those of you who don't know him, what are your thoughts about not just the weight loss prevention drugs, but just the accessibility to so much new medication and kind of how we should be thinking about it? And I want to know, are you blessed or stressed?
Yeah, well, so yeah, there's a lot there. And I think we need to kind of proceed with caution with a topic like this, because there are a few different elements. Number one, broadly speaking,
yeah.
I am not opposed to therapeutic interventions
sure.
that can help us health-wise. Like
sure.
I take medicine every day, right? Like, and it helps. So I think the idea that broadly speaking, like I said, I don't have an issue with therapeutic interventions that will help us accomplish various goals we have for our lives.
Yeah.
I also, as somebody who just genetically is not very large, I times in my life where I have been unhappy with my weight have not been times where I'm going, I need to lose 100 pounds. They've been, hey, I need to lose 10 or 15. So, and like, I'm very aware of the fact that I did not choose my body type. I did not choose my metabolism. I did not choose a variety of things.
Yeah.
So I actually have a lot of compassion for those who have strictly biological and metabolic factors.
Or largely.
Exactly. That make keeping weight off difficult, or that have lifestyle factors that were more or less inherited. So I actually have a lot of sympathy for folks who are in that spot. So all of that to say, I think I don't have a like moral or theological problem
sure.
with Ozempic.
Sure.
I think if somebody wants to, under care of a physician, get on a regimen of that that can help them lose some weight, broadly speaking, I don't have a problem with it.
Sure.
Now, and I am not an expert on this, so I want to be careful, but I feel like you've heard different things about some of the side effects. Mm. And with any therapeutic intervention, you need to be careful of that. Now, where I would urge some caution is sort of the why, right? Like, and I would say this for any sort of therapeutic intervention, all the way down to a cup of coffee in the morning, sort of why are you doing it?
Mm.
And if it's this idea, sort of like we talked about in the last segment, where if I can get down to this certain kind of weight, then all of a sudden all of my problems are going away, which none of us say quite to that extent. But I do think we believe that to a fairly 100% strong degree. I think that's where we have to go, okay, what am I asking this weight loss to do for me? And is that realistic? So, am I blessed or stressed by it? I will say I am blessed with an asterisk, because I think that it can help people get healthy. It can help people with an area of their life that is a real source of real pain.
No, 100%.
Right? Real pain.
100%.
And at 100%. The same time, again, as with virtually any therapeutic intervention, I fear a little bit the sort of the idolization of kind of accomplishing, you know, the goal that it sets out. So, 100%. But yeah, overall, I'd say blessed. How about you?
Okay, so before I answer this, I will share that Ozempic is one thing. Those kinds of, you know, maybe pills or injections are one thing. But there is another tool that people will use for weight loss that is relatively new. And I will say it is interesting. You mentioned that you have this biological kind of setup where you have this high metabolism, fast metabolism, and some other genetic factors. And you can actually give those genetic factors to somebody else who does not have those through what is called a stool transplant.
Okay. This is getting gross.
I'm just saying. For that, on that one, I am stressed. But
me too. But on Ozempic.
But on Ozempic. I think I'm blessed. I think that it I don't know that it works, that it's the right path for me. And that what I'm having to be careful with is not being tempted to do things that are shortcuts for the sake of shortcuts, but to actually figure out what are the best tools that need to be in my tool belt for maintaining my health.
Yeah.
I think that's what we all got to do.
Well, and I think you have to ask the question also, like, what do I really want? Like, it's one thing to say, okay, I want to look better because I feel I don't like the way I look because I'm carrying a bunch of extra weight, which, like, okay, that's a real thing. And I'm not hating on that. Like, I think it's a perfectly legitimate thing to think, but to also go, okay, that's maybe an intermediate goal, but if the overall goal is to be healthy, then that's where, correct me if I'm wrong, Ozempic can cause you to weigh less, which is good. Right. And like being overweight leads to a lot of negative health outcomes. So like it can help you in that, but it cannot establish a healthy lifestyle for you. I mean, it can decrease your appetite some, I guess. But I mean, even I look at like, I enjoy exercise, but also a big reason why I exercise is it helps me be healthy in everything that I do, right?
Mentally, so emotionally, all of that, for sure. So I am blessed by the ministry of Ozempic. If it works for you under the care of your physician, you should do it and talk to your doctors and figure out what things are going to make you healthy.
There you go.
Love that.
We'll be right back. All right, the last story we're going to take a look at, or last kind of topic for discussion, Pastor Judah, there was an article in the New York Times earlier this week. Headline is "Cutting Off Your Family Good Therapy," with the subhead "Encouraged on social media, many Americans are estranging themselves from their families as a therapeutic step." And this caught my attention because I think in the course of pastoral ministry, you end up in lots of conversations with lots of different people, end up engaging with a wide range of content and people kind of sharing their stories. And I feel like I bump up against this a fair amount, whether it is adults who are maybe older than me and have young adult children trying to navigate, hey, our values are really different and how do we stay connected? And does God even want us to stay connected? All the way to young adult children who see their parents get sort of what the young adults would describe as radicalized by various political ideas and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it can make it very difficult to hold space and for families to stay connected.
That's right.
And so once again, that's kind of why it caught my attention. And what I guess I want to talk about, and I think could be relevant to a lot of our listeners, is in all of the research I've seen, in all of the personal conversations that either I've been a part of or that I've observed from others, it seems that oftentimes when families reach the point of estrangement, that is kind of downstream and that there are things we can do preventatively that can sort of get in, that can, I don't know, sort of help stop that train before it's kind of going down the tracks and there's nothing else we can do.
100%. And I think one of the first things that would be on that list of prevention of estrangement where it's not necessary or critical is being suspicious of anything that is trendy on social media for so many reasons. First, on social media, we're always in kind of our echo chambers, right? And so we're not always exposed to a wide range of information. And two, virality does not necessarily mean quality or research or anything like that.
So you're saying I should not have my look to TikTok to like show me how to live right. Is that
correct.
What you're saying? Oh,
or,
okay.
Or even imagine I'm groundbreaking.
Change some things here, but go on.
So that's the first thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think that also a lot of times social media loses nuance.
Yeah.
In ways that are really, really important. And relationships, nuance is everything. And the ability to hold multiple things and to process multiple things simultaneously to then make a good decision or a healthy decision or a decision that leads to a healthy outcome requires nuance.
Yeah.
And if I'm just getting my information, you were mentioning earlier the word toxic, right? And it's like this buzzword that's become a catch-all for all kinds of things. And as you were saying it, I was thinking, like, what is the definition of toxic and a toxic relationship? How do I determine if something is toxic? What does that mean? What is the difference between toxic and uncomfortable, toxic and frustrating, toxic and stressful, right? And I don't know the answer to that right now, but I think before I cut off any relationship, I want to be really, really clear about why I'm cutting off that relationship. What are the consequences of that?
Yeah.
And certainly as a Christian, I want to make sure that I am being deeply influenced, mostly influenced by the guidance of the Holy Spirit and the biblical worldview.
Yeah, no, that's all good. I agree with all of that. And I do think to your earlier point about really being careful about the manner in which we're throwing around these terms and then claiming they apply to us, because I'm sure you would agree with this. There are legitimately toxic people in 100%. The world, those who cause real harm. And unfortunately, many of us have had the experience of having those individuals within our own family. And we have tried to make it work. And we have gone to therapy. And we have made our case, hey, mom, dad, hey, son, daughter, whatever. This is really harmful. This is harming me.
Boundaries.
We've tried to do boundaries. And it just, none of it worked. And it got to the point where we had to create a separation. And that is a grievous thing. And I don't know that anybody, like, no one's like, oh man, I really hope that someday I have to,
I'm cutting off mom.
Yeah, cut off mom. That's the dream, right? But there are those who have had to do that. But then too often, I think what we do is go, oh, well, they don't share my values. Toxic. Oh, well, they don't.
They vote differently than
me. Yeah, they vote differently than me. Toxic. They, you know, and it's just, and I think that, well, and then also, number one, I mean, we live in a world where we just treat relationships like so disposably.
Yeah.
But then number two, I think even that idea of a difference in values that we, I don't know if we just have picked this up because of inflammatory social media stuff or inflammatory other media stuff, but this idea of being able to share space with people who don't share our values is wild to me.
Yeah, and that we deeply disagree with.
Right. Mm. And as Christians, this sense of that I need to now like cut people off who don't agree, or even I was reading this book this last week and it was this couple sharing their experience, this evangelical couple had been church folks their, you know, entire adult lives, and they found out that their son was gay. Mm. And the mother was sharing her that she was really just torn up over, oh my gosh, am I going to have to choose between God and my son? And I just about threw the book across the room. Mm. I did not really almost throw the book across the room. But it was so frustrating to me to go, okay, yeah, you can have an orthodox, biblical, conservative view of gender and sexuality, but the idea that I would need to cut off a relative because of that, like, that would not even cross my mind.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, we just need to have a better way to understand, like, it's actually okay if people don't share all of your values all the time. And also, this is the key, and I think this is where we get into a lot of trouble in relationships and things blow up.
Mm.
I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here because I talk about this all the time. Like, when you're with those people, you don't need to talk about it every time.
Yeah,
like
that's
if
right.
you and the your grandma challenge. Vote differently,
yeah, that's right.
guess what? Talk about literally anything else.
You have options here.
You have options. And I think to ask them, grandma, I love spending time with you. I'd love for us to talk about other things. Like to me, that does not feel that difficult. And I think that if we can establish that at the beginning, okay, mom, dad, this is the way I'm choosing to live my life. These are, I might, like, if say it was my own son or daughter, I might disagree with that. But to go, okay, for the sake of a relationship, I'm not going to be the one who's, like, bringing this up every time we're together.
Yeah.
To me, that all feels very doable.
I think it's also important as believers for us to understand that the idea of cutting off someone, of cutting off relationship, should be taken very, very seriously.
Yeah.
Because remember, the ultimate consequence of sin is disruption of relationship.
Yeah.
First and foremost with God. And then we see that trickle into the disruption of relationships with everything and everyone else, right?
Yeah.
So the idea that we would choose to disrupt a relationship is sometimes necessary, but we need to understand just how serious that I think our God takes that.
Yeah.
And that there are often for a lot of us, not all of us, but for many of us, there are a lot of actually steps in between, you know, acknowledging that a relationship has some real challenges and getting to the point where we're saying, I am no longer going to be in relationship with this person. And I think, I know for me, I want to make sure that I have done as much of that work as I can identify before I get to that point where I say, I'm cutting you off. And the temptation that I wrestle with is that often for me, it feels like it will be easier and quicker and more convenient to just be done with folks who are, you know, who are difficult to be in relationship with me.
Yeah.
And so I'm always trying to have that conversation with myself about that kind of real frank honesty. Judah, how much of this is, yes, this person has issues and has even been harmful, and so I need something to adjust, and how much of me wanting to cut them off is that is actually what needs to be the next step versus it is the easiest step.
Yeah.
The second thing I think is really, really important to this conversation is that relationships are critical to us.
Yeah.
And so most certainly, if you are removing or cutting off a relationship, you still need relationships.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important to make sure that as much as we are saying, hey, I may not be able to be in relationship with you anymore because you are causing so much damage consistently to me or whatever, to also make sure that we are investing heavily in relationships in other spaces with other folks. The point of family is community.
Yeah.
And so maybe you're cutting off, you know, some blood relatives, but make sure you're investing in some friendships somewhere else.
Well, and then I think also, I want to choose my words carefully here. We have to watch that it doesn't become a trend. Yeah. And I don't mean trend as in fashionable, but to go, okay, it started with my uncle who maybe for somebody who knows the whole story, a reasonable person would agree. Like, yeah all right, that relationship probably needed to be cut off at least for a time. It started with something legitimate, and then it, like, the next was like your roommate said something that hurt your feelings and now you can't be friends anymore and you're moving out. You know, that all of a sudden that's it becomes that we're not actually working to develop the skills to repair.
That's right.
And then we're not developing the skills to look inward at ourselves to go, okay, what am I bringing to each of these situations that is really causing problems?
That's right.
So I think that's where, I don't know. That's where I feel. And I don't know. I feel like there are just so many other options beyond, especially as adults, beyond just the straight up cutoff.
Yeah.
That again, there's a time and a place where it is 100%. Necessary. Like 100%. If you've got somebody who is just constantly abusive or constantly 100%. Trying to manipulate
get out
you.
Of there.
Yes. Completely. But I do think that we bring a lot of this about with kind of not having the relational skills to just kind of, hey, learn to share space when we disagree, learn to love one another despite our differences.
Learn to be in pain.
Learn to be in pain.
It's a real thing.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about short-term, long-term happiness, right? That's this right. is kind of the inadvertent theme of this episode. That ability, I think, to what you were saying a minute ago, to learn to work through a lot of relational difficulty, that actually creates a level of richness in relationship that is impossible if we kind of bail out too soon.
The last thing that I'll say just on this subject is that also as believers, we say that we are trying to become Christ-like. Like that's our goal.
Yeah.
And what we see from our God is that he is willing to go to the ends of the earth for reconciliation.
Yeah.
And so therefore, so should we,
yeah.
right? That we should say, okay, reconciliation is such a high value of God's that he would give his only begotten son.
Yeah.
So even when we are having to adjust our relationships, sometimes to the point of complete disconnection, to just kind of consistently be checking in with God about those relationships, about our own hearts and saying, okay, Lord, is reconciliation possible now?
Yeah.
Is it possible? And that is very difficult when somebody has hurt you yeah. in very deep ways, damaged you in very deep ways. That's really, really difficult.
Yeah.
But I think as believers, like that's when we come to God and we say, Lord, let me be honest with you. I really don't want to be bothered with so-and-so after all that has happened.
Yeah.
But I do want to be open, Lord, to whatever your will is for my relationship with yep. that person in this season, and I'm just checking in about it.
And I think more broadly, with the exception of the truly most grievous cases where real, real, real harm was done, crime was committed, major abuse, you know, whatever. I'm not necessarily talking about those. But I think in the normal, like, hey, we just don't get along, or hey, we disagree with each other, and man, I'm just tired of you kind of being, you know, bugging me about whatever. Just to be able to, kind of to your point, to say, okay, I want to at least be clear, if I'm going to have to cut somebody off for a time, that here is what reconciliation could look like. That here are the means by which, like, if these things happen, we could start to explore what it looks like to have a relationship again. And I think when we do that, along with, like you said, checking in with God about it, I don't know, it at least leaves the door open as opposed to just writing people off completely.
100%.
All right, so as you know, we like to end with a little bit of fun, and for today's game, here's what we're going to do. We each have a objective top 10 list, meaning there is actual data to support the top 10 in the categories we have chosen, and we are going to see how many of these top 10 each of us can guess. So, Pastor Judah, are you ready for your category?
Ready is an interesting word for what I am, but I am prepared to participate.
There we go. All right. Top 10 highest grossing films of all time.
Okay. Of all time. The Lord of the Rings, maybe Fellowship of the Ring?
Nope. None of the Lord of the Rings movies are in there.
Okay. Any of the Matrix movies?
Nope.
Oh goodness, this is not going well. Any of the diehards?
Nope. Blue people who are not Smurfs.
Of course, Avatar.
Avatar.
Is Titanic on there?
Titanic.
Okay. The Godfather?
No.
Any of the Godfathers?
None of the Godfathers.
Okay. Disney. Lion King?
Lion King is on there.
Look at me!
Look at you.
Oh, gosh. That's 3 of 10.
One about a boat?
I said Titanic.
Oh, you already said Titanic. My bad. One about a guy who... One about, let's see, people getting eaten.
People getting eaten?
By dinosaurs?
Oh, Hannibal? Oh, no.
Not Hannibal.
Oh, Jurassic Park. Of course, there we go. Jurassic Park would be on there.
All right, so we'll give you credit for 4, sort of, with some hints. We have Avatar, Avengers Endgame, Avatar Way of Water, Titanic, Star Wars The Force Awakens, another Star Avengers Wars, Infinity War, Spider-Man, Jurassic Park, The Lion King, and another Avengers.
I didn't enjoy that at all.
All right, yeah, that was a little rough, but I definitely would not have done better if that's of any consolation to you. All right, go ahead.
All right, so my list is the top best-selling music artist of all time based on certified sales.
What
makes
sales.
This difficult is that it may not necessarily be based on popularity per se.
Okay.
All right.
Celine Dion.
No.
Oh, Elvis Presley.
Yes.
The Beatles.
Yes.
The Rolling Stones.
No.
Beyonce.
No.
Taylor Swift.
No.
Oh, come on. Oh, goodness gracious.
Okay. There are two guys who are always kind of pitted against each other. They're both dead. One of them is on the list.
I'll go Tupac.
No.
Notorious B.I.G.
That was not where I was going.
Quite. Two guys at each other that are both dead?
One wears purple and one wears a glove.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
And not
you
Prince.
Went to Tupac I and went to Biggie.
I'm like, I know rap Michael was Jackson big, but Prince. I'm a little surprised that they were on the top 10. Okay, they were not. That makes a little more sense. Okay.
There's another band, or two more bands on this list.
Okay, we already talked about the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, the Who?
Nope.
No. Oh my gosh. Elton John?
Yes.
Hey, Elton all right.
Is on the list. He's not a band, but yes,
he's
is
not
on the
a
list.
Band. But okay, give me another hint on the bands.
Okay, one is a color is in their title, and the other one sounds like it could be somebody's name.
Oh goodness. Name. Okay. Well, the color in the title, what comes to mind is Green Day, but no. It doesn't feel like that. They're not on that
older.
Level. Older. Oh my gosh. Oh goodness.
Color. Think color.
Color. Blue. Uh-huh. Red.
Keep going. Keep
purple.
Going. Keep going.
Green.
You're
yellow.
Keep going. I just wish we'd get to the color.
Orange. Oh my gosh. How many colors are there?
Okay, so that's Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd.
Okay.
Oh, Dark Side of the Moon. Oh, my parents would be so upset. They love Pink Floyd. And the other sounds like it could be someone's name.
Somebody's name.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I don't know.
While you're thinking about that, there is somebody who is from the Caribbean on this list.
Bob Marley.
Nope.
What?
Woman.
Woman.
This is the only one that has surprised me.
Not Erykah Badu. She's not from the Caribbean.
No, she's from here.
She from here?
Yeah, she's from here.
A woman from the Caribbean.
From the Caribbean. There's only like one woman from the Caribbean who's like a big artist. Think Beyonce in that. Rihanna.
Rihanna. Okay, I wasn't going to get there.
Okay, then there are two women whose names start with M on this list.
Mariah Carey.
Yes.
And
like
Miley Cyrus. Oh, Madonna. Of course, Madonna. Okay, what was the name, the band that could be a name?
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin is someone's name?
Well, I don't know. It sounds like somebody's name.
Sounds like, you know, if your name is Led Zeppelin, you better be pretty tough. But all right. Well, I hope that you did better than Pastor Judah and I both did on that. Thanks for joining us.
The last one was Eminem. Sorry.
Oh, Eminem. Important. Didn't even catch that one. All right. Okay. Well, I don't even know how many I got without a hint, like 2.5, but whatever. Hey, thanks for listening. Leave us a rating or review if you like what you heard, and we'll see you next time on Engaging Culture.
Bye.